What is up, man? How you doing?
Man, I'm doing great, dude. I was driving over to the dispensary this morning, you know?
And nice.
It's like I'm driving along the coast, and these like little beach towns have their own little cops, right? And I'm literally going 35, and this car is going 37 in front of me. Gets pulled over by the cop going 37. And I was like, damn, you know what that reminds me of? Joey fucking Crawford. Like, you can play a whole game, right? And then all of a sudden, it's like, we're going to, like, enforce this, like, minor rule. Or, like, now it's like Tony Brothers, dude. Like, and these refs that just, like, decide. The guy who threw out Draymond the other day. I get it, Draymond deserved it. But it's like activist referees now. You know what I mean? Like, and I feel like it's going to become a bigger storyline in the playoffs. Like, I'm not saying that happened. That's not the story of the Philly game. I'm not saying that. But you just hate seeing that impact games and series and stuff like that, you know?
Man.
Cops.
I'm so glad you brought this up. So glad you brought this up, man. First of all, with all due respect, I respect all police officers for what they do in protecting the public. But pulling someone 37? Over for going two over, that's a big fuck you. That's a big fuck you. Second thing I want to bring up is the referees, man. Obviously, this is something that we're going to talk a lot about for the foreseeable future. But the one thing I want to say about basketball, and this is something from coming from a coach's standpoint and a player at one point. I used to coach and play when this one referee would coach. He was a long, tall, skinny guy in Oklahoma City, always at the Lighthouse. And he always would get excited when he knew he was calling our games. He liked to coach our ref against me. I was always respectful towards him. He never gave me a technical. I never, you know, talked back to him. We kept it professional. That was playing from freshman all the way to senior. And then that was, again, as a coach for 3 years afterwards. So for me, like, this is where it goes back to it, is that I look at this moment and I say, you cannot be a ref and not pick your favorite teams to ref, not pick your favorite players, not give a player that you like a little bit more an extra step or a little bit more physicality on defense, or, you know, oh, that's a foul. That's, you know, we're going to go ahead and put you guys up on the free throw line. Like, he's going, like, there. That's the thing, is like, these refs nowadays, they are more of fans of the NBA than some of the fans of the NBA are. Mm-hmm. And being with that said, is they have to have their favorite players. You see how they treat LeBron. You see how they treat Giannis. You see how they treat Joker. Like, they treat these guys in Embiid. They treat them differently. They give them more respect. I mean, the other night when we were playing against 76ers and Embiid was on the baseline and he goes against Jay Will and they call a foul against Jay Will, which wasn't a foul. Anywhere else, Embiid went right towards Jay Will.
Yep.
And challenged it, but they didn't get overturned. Why didn't it get overturned? It was because there was contact.
Yeah.
And they can make that foul as long as there's contact. It doesn't matter who drew the contact. And that's where I get back down to it, is that they need to take these decisions 100% out of these refs' hands if it's been challenged. They need not to let them have that opportunity to look at. They need to have a third referee that is not even there, that is all designed. He is designed to do is look at the thing. And it's a, you know, I'm sorry. I've seen it happen so many times where they're interviewing a referee, an ex-referee in ESPN, saying, was this a bad call? And the ex-referee will sit there and be like, well, I mean, like, I don't want to call it a bad call. I don't want to call it a good call. You know, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, they'll dance around actually giving an answer for it. It's the most useless person that they can have as an ex-referee on an ESPN interview, because they're never going to give a straight answer. And that's the same case, is that you have to have somebody completely that's separated from the referees, that doesn't give a shit if they are going to give a bad ranking because they got this call wrong and this call wrong. And now it's been 17 calls in a row that they've been challenged and it's been overturned. Like, they need to know these stats and they need to get better at it because it's out of hand.
Yeah. I mean, I thought that was the right call for coach to challenge it, but they didn't overturn it. You know, whatever.
How do you get an overturn like that, though? He's an MVP.
That's kind of like playing rock, paper, scissors with somebody who has a trump, and they're just like, MVP, ha, you lose. MVP, you lose. Like, whatever. Like,
I know. Take it out of their decision.
Yeah. I mean, but no J-Dub, no Shea.
Dude,
and
have...
like, what are we seeing right now?
Have a a person from the player association.
Oh, really?
Make these calls. That'd be crazy. Fuck the refs, bro.
That'd be insane, dude. That'd be insane. Dude.
I mean, seriously, because they represent the players only, and this affects the players. And if it's the right call, they need to be the ones overturning it.
Dude, let's talk about the game, though. Let's not get too carried away with restructuring, officiating. no J-Dub and no Shea. Do you think that's just like what we were talking about the other day, load management going into playoffs? They looked healthy on the sideline. If this was the playoffs, would they be playing?
Who do we play tonight?
Tonight is the Celtics.
Celtics.
Bro. So,
it's back to back. We're going to see this. We got, what, 7 games or 8 games left? 7, 8.
Let's just say
Shea plays in 4, J-Dub plays in 4. You know, let's just call it out, man. I would like them to sit together because I think it's better for the team, because I think that the team without J-Dub and Shea still can win 3 more games. So, like, to me, like, I want to see this team, seeing them pull more together and seeing the role players fight for position for the playoffs.
Yeah. Fight for it, man. I think it's interesting to see Wiggins get, like, unlimited run in a game like that and see what that looks like, really challenge him in a different environment, because, you know, pretty consistently he's been getting, you know, 12, 15 minutes a game.
Sure.
Put him out there and really get him amped up, because you never know what will happen in a playoff series. Kaysen, when you lean on him heavily, you can see the potential, but where his game is going to come over the summer, you know, he's going to be studying this film right now when it's kind of like, hey, there's no Shea, there's no J-Dub. You know, this is your opportunity. So where is the defense playing you soft? Where can you improve your game? That mid-range game is sick right now for him. Obviously, we've talked a lot about his three-point shooting. So then what it becomes is something you've talked a lot about, which is you get to the point where you start hunting your shots. And I see him starting to, like, look for his shot very quickly, even before he catches the ball sometimes. But hunting your shots is a little bit different. So that's kind of like evaluating that group and what would it take to win that game. You know, it was a pretty fucking great game, although we didn't get the win. But those were kind of what I saw opportunities. What'd you think about it?
Well, I mean, we obviously had a great play from Chet, 22 points, 2 blocks, 7 rebounds, 1 assist, efficient 50% from the line on from field goal and 3-point land. Yeah. I like those stats. Those are great. You know, we also had 15 from Dort and Wiggins. So that's great to see. 14 from Isaiah Joe. But really, I want to take a moment. And, you know, Jay Will was asked to start. He had a this is going to blow your mind, bro. He had 6 points, 1 steal, 6 rebounds, and 12 assists.
Right.
All right. So he was everywhere. He was proving that he understands the offense, unlike any other big guy that we have right now. And it's truly special. And the other guy I want to take a moment and just really just speak his praises and just take a moment in how well he's been playing recently. That is Josh Giddey, man. Josh Giddey has been playing incredibly well. Last night, he didn't have what I would consider an insane game, but guess what? He made an offensive rebound when we were having an opportunity to tie the game, all right? Got an offensive rebound. I think he got it right out to Isaiah Joe, or got it to Jay Will, who got it to Isaiah Joe for a pretty wide open 3, an opportunity to tie the game. Yeah. But Josh Giddey was everywhere. He was 28 minutes, but he was in and out of traffic. He was running the offense. He was the reason that we were in the game so many times. We were ahead a couple times by double digits, and Josh was leading the way at those moments. And I get it. People are going to say, well, there's other guys that played incredibly well, but I understand that. And I want to tip my hat to those guys. But Josh, in the last, I want to say 12, 13 games, has really solidified who he is in this Oklahoma City Thunder team. And the fact is that coach hasn't taken him out of the starting lineups for a very good reason. And now we're seeing why, because it's coming down to crunch time. And we all know that the Australian hoopers, they know when it's time and a game is on the line, and they come and they hoop like nobody's business. And Josh is no exception. When the game's on the line, when the season's on the line, Josh shows up. And you look at Madison Square Garden, you look at, you know, they're going to play in the Garden tonight. Like, they have so many big games in these big arenas where the spotlight's on them, and it's going to get more and more and more. And having somebody like Josh is how this team is going to win championships.
Dude, let's talk a little bit about what we really hope to see a lot at the beginning of this year. kind of going back to it, actually, 2 years ago, we were hoping to see it. But this year, we really were geared up to see Jay Will and Chet play a lot of minutes together. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but they haven't played a whole lot of minutes together. Coach just doesn't run them out there together that much. And it's almost kind of like something that you forgot that you wanted to see, because it's like they just don't do it. But then we get to see what it looks like with them together. And I would say there's very little overlap in their game. And they both can shoot the three. Chet is more of a high volume, and Jay Will's more of a "I'll keep you honest" type three-point shooter. But in the end, the way that they duel together, defensively, Jay Will will take Embiid and take the tougher matchup on the inside, even though he's a little undersized. And then offensively, Chet plays that five, and Jay Will is obviously an amazing distributor and great vision, understands the offense inside and out, can play on and off the ball. And it's really beautiful to see what it looks like. Do you think we'll see more of that in the playoffs, or is this just because those two guys were out that we got to see a lot of that?
I think there's a lot of matchups that Coach D has not put out there on purpose for regular season. I think he, like every player, has a second and a third and fourth gear that he's only bringing out for the playoffs. And the reason that we haven't seen this Jay Will and Chet combination is a lot of it has to do with the way that J-Dub's been playing at that power forward position. It's not a diss on Jay Will, but when Jay Will comes in the game, it is for Chet typically. And now I think Coach is starting to recognize that there's power in when they have a really dominant big man and putting Jay Will out there and allowing the power forward go up against Chet. Like this is a beneficial thing for Chet and Jay Will. So we saw a lot of that last night. We saw a lot of lazy defense from Embiid on Jay Will, and it ended up costing their team a significant amount of points. And so, like, we're looking at that and we're starting to understand that, you know, Jay Will had a hand in 30 plus points last night. Okay, Jay Will had a hand in 30 plus points last night. And I think it's important that we need to stop and just appreciate that aspect of what he is doing. And the fact is that he is like a Rondo out there, but he's a center. And the fact is that Rajon Rondo, he just obviously retired, but he is one of those guys that doesn't need to score in order to have a double-double. And Jay Will is exactly that person for us that is able to come into games and open the floor up like nobody's business. And we have that with Josh Giddey as the guard, but having that as a point, you know, as a forward slash center is something that's special. You don't see a lot of that guys, those guys in the league. So, you know, Jay Will next to Chet opened up the game in such a way that everybody had to stop and say, okay, now there's a mismatch against Chet. And it doesn't matter who that power forward is. It's an automatic mismatch because Chet's going to be 6 inches taller than him, you know? So then you're looking at the center position and you're like, oh, well, Jay Will is a little bit overmatched, but then Jay Will pulls that shit out, takes advantage of Embiid, not really playing him very tough, pulling Embiid out to the perimeter and then getting wide open layups for everybody else or wide open jump shots for everybody else. Like, that is exactly how this offense needs to run with J-Dub and Shea in the game, along with Chet and everybody else that's going to be playing and filling in those holes. Because if we're able to do that and we're able to open up the court like that, nobody's going to be able to stop us, man. Like, we don't need to shoot 40% from three-pointers, from three-point land in a game to win the game. We shoot so many threes that we can shoot 30% and still beat most teams in the playoffs shooting 30% from three because of the way that we spread out and get these wide open shots. That's the beautiful thing about it. Nobody's taking shots that are forced right now, unless there's 3 seconds left on the shot clock. They're all wide openly, perfectly designed three-point shots that coach has in our offense. That just is beautiful, man.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, it's one of those ones you want to win even when you're down your two best players. I think it's a good sign for us. If you go back and you think about a game where we were missing Shea 2 years ago, we could have got beat by 70. If you go back a year ago and you say we're missing Shea and J-Dub, we're probably getting beat by 30. And then you can come in and say, yeah, we're missing both of those guys in this game. And look how far the rest of the guys have come. Josh has been stepping up, like you mentioned, and Chet is, you know, clearly ready for a larger offensive role. But these types of things seem to work out in the playoffs. When you start playing the same team four, sure, five, six, seven times in a row, then you tend to really emphasize, if you have a matchup advantage, scratching that itch over and over and over again. And that's really the challenge of the playoffs. Sure. We saw some really great playoff series in the past, but for the most part, the reason that we were able to win playoff series in the past, and when we did win them, was because we just had more talent than everybody else.
Hmm.
I mean, we played as a team. We had good chemistry. We had, solid coaching. But I wouldn't say that we ever had the advantage in
coaching. Are you talking Brooks?
Chemistry. I'm just saying, like,
coaches Brooks.
I mean, it just in the end,
there was no system. Right. There was no system. It was one-on-one. Our players are better than your players. And anybody that wants to say that Coach Brooks had a system and that found open shots, like, that is why Coach Donovan came in. It was because he was over-system. Like, that was the issue that we were having, is no system. Now we're going to bring Donovan in, which is more systems than we can ever imagine. Like, that was the issue, man. Like, if you look back at all the issues that we've had in the past, like, not having a system that these guys can score easily, that these guys don't have to hunt their buckets out like every single time, that they get wide open shots anytime they want. Like, our system is designed to be able to have a five-headed monster and be able to control the NBA completely. Like, that's what this is designed for. You say triangle offense, my fucking ass, bro. The triangle offense is like, that is like having a standard right now in a truck. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody else has fucking automatics, but somebody still has a standard out there, right? And a 2024 standard at that, okay? So my point is that, like, you cannot sit here and you cannot say that the way the NBA has changed every outlook and every perspective of everything. And having a system that adapts, that you can have five players that can just dominate the game at any given time, right? Allows you to have a five-headed monster. And the triangle offense, that's the past now. That's way past there. Like, this is the modern offense, and all the offenses in the NBA are going to be imaged off of what Coach D is doing. He's going to be the birth of this new offense in the NBA. And anybody that is a professional and knows anything about the game is going to be able to break it down and understand exactly what Coach D is doing. It's going to take a matter of 5 years before there's going to be a coaching staff member of the Oklahoma City Thunder in almost every single fucking team in the league. Like, it's going to be the poaching that we have never seen and we can never express, because that is how crazy it is. Our biggest hope is that we can lock up Coach D for the next 20 years and that he's not going anywhere. That's our biggest hope. But the reality is that it's going to take $100 million to do so.
Start spending that money. Hey,
bro,
bring us championships. That shit's real.
Dude, he's worth every bit of $100 million over the course of 20 years. I mean, he's worth $100 million over the next 10 years. That's how good Coach D is. And anybody that will disagree, watch how he runs the offense. Watch how he runs the defense. It's so perfect. Nobody will be able to compete with that for the next 10 years. By the time they catch up, they'll be like, I wish we had Coach D on our team. Don't believe me? Listen to LeBron James talk about Coach D, and then you'll understand.
Yeah, so this Western Conference, first place race, I can't really remember anything that's quite like it. It reminds me more of like a mascot race where first place trips and falls, and now third place is in first place. And, like as soon as one seems like they're getting an advantage, then they lose the advantage. And now, so we went into the game first place. We sat our two best players. We exit the game third place. And it seems like it could change several more times before, this is all settled. Can you remember anything like this?
I mean, yeah. I mean, there's a couple times in the 90s or, early 2000s. I guess a few years ago, there would have been something like this. But
I remember it's
been
a
couple of years, man. Like,
middle of the pack, kind of like.
Never two young teams.
Yeah. And a championship contender in the middle. It's very interesting.
You have the Thunder. Everybody on their team is really under 30 years old. You have Minnesota Timberwolves. All their like big players are under 30 years old. I mean, they could get rid of some of their players and, you know, that are a little bit older than 30. And then you've got Denver, who has, you know, chock full of every, you know, guys under 30 years old. Like, this is what we've been saying for a while now. Like, the old NBA, the Chris Paul era, right? The LeBron James, the Carmelo Anthony, which is obviously already gone. But there's so many other guys that we've appreciated and we've enjoyed. And over the next 3 years, all of those guys are gone. All of them. There's no way LeBron plays for 3 more years. There's just no way. So with that being said, is now we have this new face of the NBA, right? And people are calling for Luka, right? People are like, Luka, right? People are saying Embiid. See, people are saying Joker. But the whispers are starting to get louder, bro. They're getting really loud about Shea. Like, people are starting to realize that they don't want a 2000s MVP like James Harden, who doesn't play defense like Luka. They don't want a player like Joker continuing to dominate like he is in Denver, right? They're looking at Shea and they're saying, what's happening with Shea is truly spectacular. He plays on both ends. He shoots incredibly well. He doesn't miss. He hits clutch shots. He, like, again, he plays defense, which is awesome. And he's making people fall in love with the way that the Oklahoma City Thunder offense is able to highlight him without taking advantage of him. And I think a lot of people are starting to take note. And to me, it's just encouraging, because having a system, having the players to fill that system, is the reason we were never able to get a championship. And now we have the players and we have the system, and it's up to them and up to stay healthy in order for us to be able to capitalize on that.
Yeah. I mean, let's hope that's why we saw those guys sitting. You know, I'm feeling amped up for the playoffs. It's going to be a long playoff, we're hoping. So, yeah, get ready for the ride, everybody. It's going to be a hell of a time.
It's going to be bumpy, baby.